I've been asked to do this in about 30 minutes, so I think what I'm going to do in that is try to present some things, and rather than opening up for questions during that 30 minutes, because I don't think there'll really be the time for it, as Mike mentioned, if somebody would like to talk afterwards, if you have questions afterwards, I kind of like to talk about the subject, so that won't be a problem to spend a little bit more time discussing some things about what God's been doing in Brazil. We have been tremendously blessed to be involved in that work since 1993. In fact, I took my wife out to celebrate our 10th wedding anniversary at about 37,000 feet. And she says, yeah, but you went up to another seat and sat there with Gary Fisher and you guys were talking during as you were eating and I was back there in another place with the kids. She said it wasn't exactly a romantic anniversary dinner. But that was our 10th wedding anniversary as we left the United States and went to Brazil, thinking we would be there for about 3 to 5 years. Benita said it turned into a life sentence. I got commuted from 3 to 5 to life. But let me give you some background about the country, and then I want to tell you more about the work that's going on there. Brazil has about 209 million people, so a little less than the population of the United States, spread out over an area that is actually larger than the 48 contiguous states of the United States. If we hadn't bought Alaska from the Russians, Brazil would be bigger than the United States. It is a very diverse country in every respect. Part of it is north of the equator, most of it is south. Part of it, a good part of it is within the tropical zone, some of it is beyond the tropical zone. So we have a lot of diversity in climate, culture from one part to another. As I mentioned, very large land area. Over the time we've been in Brazil, in general, the economic conditions of the country have improved. It's still considered a developing country, what they used to call third world countries. That's no longer the politically correct term for that. But it is still viewed as a country that is somewhat backward as far as its economic progress. The economy the last few years has faltered. It seems to be taking an upswing now after the impeachment of the president and the efforts of the new president to try to put some things in order. And I describe that as a complicated political situation. There have been people that have been talking a whole lot about that complicated situation for a couple of years. And politics is not the reason we're there. As far as the religious influences, primary influences would be, first of all, the Roman Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church, if you looked at things from back about 1980 to 90, would have been listed that Brazil was about 90% Catholic. That number is probably somewhere a little below 70% now. And that really has been one of the areas where we have seen some of our best opportunities. There has been a significant exodus from the Catholic Church, most of those people going into some sort of evangelical churches, and many of them, after a time, recognizing that there's some things here that just don't seem to make a lot of sense, and they start seeking. And it's when they start seeking that many times we're able to come into contact with them. Neo-Pentecostalism, the health and wealth gospel and the concept of miracles for the benefit of the listener, is also quite strong in Brazil. Many of those who have left the Catholic Church have gone into some of these neo-Pentecostal churches. In the 23 years that we've been down there, just some background in general on that, there has been significant participation by North American Christians in that work, some who have lived there for a while. I mentioned that when we moved down, Gary Fisher and his family moved down at the same time, along with three single people from northern Alabama who spent a year helping us. A few months later, Joe Works and his family moved, and they spent 2 years. Gary came back after 3. Alan Dvorak went down for a couple of years. Tim Richter, Mike Bozeman, have been others that have been there. Joe came back after 2 and then went back again for a couple more. Carl Ballard, a young man who was an agnostic when he left for an exchange program in Europe and was converted while he was in Europe, came back and worked for a while with a congregation in Louisville with an older preacher, and then he went to Brazil. And he learned his Portuguese faster than any of us, because he did something that we were advised to do but didn't when we moved down there. There was an older Christian who was bilingual that said, you know, the best way to learn Portuguese is to get a Brazilian girlfriend. But our wives didn't go for that idea. Carl was single, so Carl took the advice. He got a Brazilian girlfriend, later made her his wife. And Carl spent several years in Brazil, came back to the U.S. for a while, went back to Brazil for a few more years, and is now back in the U.S. again. Carl has helped a great deal in the work over those years. There have also been a number of others who from a distance have helped, and I'm not going to try to name everybody that's made trips down to spend some time helping us, but from a distance, obviously there have been a number of congregations involved in supporting me and supporting other men who have been down there, who have helped with expenses of work for travel and for publication of materials and things like that. But I also want to mention somebody that is familiar to some of you, at least who have been around here for a while. I don't know of anybody who has contributed more to the efforts that we've been making in Brazil without living there than Carl Henneke. Carl had the idea back about 1995 of taking material that we'd been publishing in printed form and putting it on the internet. And at that point, when you said something about that to Brazilians, and I wasn't much ahead of them, most people would have said, "What's the internet?" But he suggested, you know, you're publishing this material, why don't we just put it out there? And I remember after a while, we got pretty excited because, I don't remember how many weeks or months this took, but we had a little counter at the bottom of the main page of the site, and 1,000 people had visited the site. These days, that takes about 35 or 40 minutes to happen. And I'll get to that in a few minutes when I talk a little bit more about that. As far as Brazilian participation, and that's where our focus has been. In these 23 years, I've never asked an American, North American church to provide support to a Brazilian preacher. We've encouraged Brazilian churches to support Brazilian preachers, that they choose them and they support them and that they get them involved in their commitments to that work. And so we have had opportunities with a number of different congregations. We have a relationship with about 35 congregations throughout the country. Almost all of those groups that we've helped start over these last 23 years. A few men who are preaching, being supported by Brazilian churches to do that. But in most of the churches, all the work is done by people who are not financially supported in that. Men who work secular jobs but prepare a lesson and do the best they can at teaching and preaching on Sunday. Many times, very small congregations where a lot of that burden falls on just one man to try to do that, in addition to the responsibilities he has in other work. It is not the fastest way, perhaps, but I think in many ways it provides a stability of being much more a national work than something that we are bringing in from the outside. A little bit about contacts that we develop. I think anywhere you go, the best contacts are going to be personal contacts. And that means many times working with new Christians to get to the people they know, encouraging them to talk to their family members, to talk to their coworkers, to talk to their neighbors, and to try to get to those what we might refer to as warm contacts. Since we didn't have all those contacts when we first went down there, we started from the very beginning doing a lot of work with printed material, handing out correspondence courses on the street. There was one bridge I used to really like to do this in São Paulo, that it was a bridge, cars went across it, but on both sides had areas for pedestrians. And I saw one time a news report suggesting that each day, approximately 1 million pedestrians crossed that bridge. I could hand out about 1,200 flyers an hour just standing in one spot on that bridge. And so we would invite people to come to Bible studies that we were doing right there in the center of the city. We'd do studies every Saturday. Then we started adding additional ones during the week. And that was part of what led to many of the early conversions in the work there and the start of some of the first congregations. About 6 years ago, and almost 6 years ago, a man down in southern Brazil in the state of Rio Grande do Sul was converted. It was a contact that came through our website. He obeyed the gospel. He runs an auto repair shop with his dad and a couple of brothers. And so it's not a real big city that he lives in, and different ones will bring their cars in. And one day, the editor of the local newspaper came in to have his car worked on. And this guy started talking to him, and he said, "You know, you've got columns in your newspaper about different things." He said, "You've got a column by the local Catholic priest, and you've got a column by some Spiritist author. Do you ever think about a column maybe like, what does the Bible say?" And got the guy's interest, and so he went on to say, "You know, I know somebody that I think could probably write that for you. He runs a website that has quite a bit of material on it." And so he pitched the idea, and after a while, he told me what he'd done, and then I got an email from this editor asking if I would write a column to go in their newspaper. So for the last almost 6 years, I've been writing two columns that are half of a page in a tabloid-sized newspaper, two columns a week for that newspaper that goes out to about 40 small towns in the northern part of that state. And everything that gets published in that, we put on our website too, so it gets used in a broader way as well on the website. But it's turned out to be an interesting opportunity. I've dealt with some fairly controversial issues and figured this will probably be the last one. They're probably going to pull the plug after dealing with this. But that hasn't happened so far. They've given me free rein to go ahead and write on things that need to be written on. And just by somebody taking an opportunity, a new convert, opened that door by just a conversation with a client that came in. The internet has turned out to be by far our most effective tool at finding contacts of what you'd call cold contacts. As I mentioned, the idea of starting the website was Carl Henneke's back in about 1995. Carl has done the site administration on that, and that means that he has, best I can figure out, he has spent some time working on that site, I think, every day for the last 22 years. It's not uncommon for Carl to send me an email that I see that comes in about 7 o'clock in the morning, my time. The closest we ever get is 2 hours apart. When it's 7 o'clock for me, it's 5 o'clock for him. And there are times of the year that it's even a bigger stretch than that. On the website, we've started in the last few years putting videos on there. We've also set up pages on some of the social media, Facebook and Twitter and Google+. Got some women involved in taking the articles that are being featured each day and posting on those different social media to where they post about 4 times a day on each of those different outlets, and ways to try to encourage people to come to the site and to get more people involved in the work that's being done. So when we talk about these cold contacts, a typical process that happens with people has been something like this. First of all, a person reaches a level of frustration. Either problems in their personal life or family life, or sometimes, many times, frustration religiously. They're not understanding or accepting some kind of teaching that's going on in the church or some practice that's going on in the church they're a part of. So they start seeking. They get on the internet and they do a Google search. And if they do a Google search on just about any Bible topic, it is likely that our site is going to pop up as one of the first 3 options that they will have, which means it's above the fold, as they used to say on newspapers. But it's on the first screen that shows up on the internet. And that's partly because of the way that Carl has set some things up. It's also partly because the site, over 20-some years, has accumulated a tremendous amount of material. We have thousands of articles on lots of different topics that some of them I've written, others we've translated from other writers. Some other brethren who've been in Brazil for a time have written. And so a person gets started, they start reading things and watching videos, and they start studying through that website, and at some point make contact with us. Now, for everyone that makes contact, there may be hundreds of thousands of others that don't actually make that contact with us. We're talking about reaching out to a lot of people to find the ones who are really seeking. But we get an email, or maybe a contact through some other means, or if it's printed material, it'll come through the mail. Or as we go out and we do public studies in different parts of the country, somebody will come. And they'll say, I've been reading your stuff for the last couple of years, and I saw you were finally doing studies in my area, and so here I am. We've had some situation where people have driven hours. We've had people spend a night on a bus to get someplace. People get on a plane and fly from some other part of the country to get to where we were doing studies because the interest has already been built up from what they've been looking at on this website. And so in some cases, then, that leads to conversions and leads to the beginning of new congregations, which is, as I mentioned, how we've helped in starting 30 or so congregations over the few years that we've been there. Few years, and I guess it's not so few anymore. 23 of the years that we've been down there. I want to give you a little bit of background about the website. I don't know how well, it's showing up pretty well up here in the front. Every red dot indicates a place from which somebody has accessed the website. I'm not sure just what period of time this covers, and I tried to get the data. I wasn't real clear on all that. But what you can see with that is that we got people coming from all over the world, literally. Is there a pointer on here? Yeah, I don't know if it really matters. If you can all see the red dots, there's a greater concentration of them. Okay.
Just push it forward.
Okay.
There you go.
There's a greater concentration of red dots in Brazil than anywhere else, because that's where most of the Portuguese speakers of the world live. You see some from up in the Portugal area and throughout Europe. There are Portuguese speakers scattered throughout Europe. And then others, a fair number in the United States. Most of these would be Brazilians who are living in these other countries, Japan, the United States, and so on. There are some countries in Africa where Portuguese is one of the primary languages, and so we get some from over there. The Portuguese crown spread pretty far in its period of colonization 500 years ago, and so there are vestiges of that throughout different parts of the world. As far as the activity on the website, in 2016, it was the first time that we have had 10 straight months of more than 1 million visits to the site each month, and a total of over 14 million visits to the site during the year. If you had told me back in 1995 that we could write material and put it out there and have a million people a month looking at it, it would have blown my mind. It still does, I think, pretty much. These are numbers that are pretty big for me to even comprehend. Now, many of these people are on and off the site within a minute. They're not really looking for that. That's not really what they're wanting. But some of them will stay for hours. And some of them will spend all night watching videos that are on there or reading material that's on there. And that's when they start to get really interested and, in a sense, hooked on that. The internet users come in from all over the world on that. But I wanted to point out this point. This was from 2016. 2/3 of Brazilians now have access to the internet. And so that has made this become a very effective tool for us. I mentioned back in 1995, a lot of them didn't even know what it was. It has become a daily part of their lives now. And as an idea of how the activity on the site has grown, this is a comparison of 2016 with 2011. We had an increase of 119% in the number of accesses over that 5-year period. That's faster than the growth of access to the internet, obviously way faster than the growth of the population of Brazil, which means that we're getting more and more people coming to our site, more than just people that are getting on the internet in general. And so, and I don't know where it stops. The opportunities have been great in the site. The website has certainly been our most effective tool at reaching people that we don't know, getting out to those cold contacts. We use videos on the website. We use YouTube technology to embed the videos then on our website. And we've had, I think I've got something here. Yeah, I didn't update the stats on this, but from 2015, we're getting almost 30,000 views a month of the videos that were on there, which means basically 4 people watching videos around the clock all year. Now, I don't know of many other teaching tools that I can use to be able to teach that many people, especially when I'm sleeping. I may talk in my sleep, but I'm not sure it would be very edifying. So it's a tool that helps us to get things out and to reach more people than we would be able to without that technology. Something about the public studies. I mentioned that some of our contacts will show up at these public studies. We started doing some of these in a different way at the very beginning, right after we got to Brazil. But over the last 11 or 12 years, I've been traveling more to try to get out to more different places and offer these studies. We try to do these studies in what I would describe as neutral locations, typically not in a church building, and it's not presented as the church in such and such a place invites you to. It's Bible study. And in fact, I sometimes will talk with the Christians who are going to be present, give them some suggestions. This is not an us and them situation. So we don't talk here about our brethren and our visitors. That's something you do in a local congregation. It's not something we do in these public forum studies. We're all there to study the Bible. And so we're not going to make a distinction about who's from where as we're studying. Obviously, we will try to open up contacts and opportunities. And many times at the end, I'll point out if you want to continue studying, there are some people here that can help you, and I'll point out some of the Christians that are there for people to make that direct local contact. But in neutral locations, we typically do what we refer to as study marathons. If we get less than 6 hours of study in a day, we kind of see it as wasting the opportunity. So in these, we will usually schedule several hours of study and try to make the most of what we can do. It's efficient on a number of levels. If we're having to rent a place to do the studies, we can do as much in a day as most churches would do in a gospel meeting of a week. So we pay one day's rent for that. If we're traveling, and I'm often traveling to go someplace, it's the cost of airfare to go and spend a weekend that'll involve usually some time with brethren, maybe on Friday night, public studies on Saturday, spend time with brethren on Sunday, worship with them, and then I can be back home on Monday, back to other responsibilities there. We include in these public forums question and answer periods, and that means you can get it from every direction and sometimes have no clue where people are coming from, but they'll ask their questions and they have to be answered. We'll advertise these on our website. We'll sometimes pass out flyers. One little church in Manaus that did these not only in Manaus, but several members from there traveled to other cities in the region back in 2011. And I think figured out that little congregation of about 25 people was responsible for handing out more than 100,000 flyers just in that 1 year of 2011. They got to work. Going door to door, going to bus stops, whatever they could do, to invite people to Bible studies. We try to work with topics that are intended to challenge people. In a local congregation, I would give a great emphasis to textual Bible studies. In this kind of a situation where we may have only one opportunity, many times we try to choose things that will more directly address the kinds of questions that people will have after they've been studying for a while, but now they come to this study, and we need to help them understand the real challenges of making decisions. But I don't want to leave it just at numbers and statistics. Preaching the gospel is about people. We have to get together with people. We have to sit down with people, open the Bible with them. I remember commenting several years ago when Skype technology started to get bigger, and it's been used effectively by a number of brethren, including in Brazil. But I mentioned to my wife, I said, you know, maybe I don't need to be traveling so much. Maybe I could just get in contact with these people and do these studies by Skype or something. And she said to me, if you don't get face-to-face with them, it's not going to have the same effect. And I've seen that wisdom borne out in a number of situations, that people can be corresponding, they can be communicating by some other means, but it's when we sit down with them and open a Bible in front of them and look them in the eye and get them to see the implications of what the text is saying in their own lives, that's when people are much more likely to make their decisions. And so sometimes they've studied for months in an indirect way, but the direct studies are then what are needed to bring them to decisions. And when you talk about preaching is about people, I want to just refer to a few individual cases here. Henata, I've got that pointer again here. It probably works better if I point to the one up here instead of the one back there. But Henata, this blonde lady up here, was one of the contacts that came to us through the internet. She lived in a city where she didn't know anybody else, and we didn't know anybody else either that was practicing what she was. But she started studying, changed her life dramatically after she was converted. A friend of hers was converted, another woman. And the two of them for a few years continued in that city, as often as they could, driving to another city maybe 60 miles away where they'd be able to get together with other Christians. But Henata has continued to be quite dedicated and quite faithful. Pedro is a fascinating story. Pedro is down in Porto Alegre in the southern part of the country. But I want to tell you how Pedro came to obey the gospel. He was studying material on our website, and he sent an email to me. And when I get these emails, I'll often look at the contact information and try to pass them on to somebody who's closer to where that person is. And so I looked at his, and I saw his phone number and the area code on it, and that area code was from down in southern Brazil. And so I passed his contact information on to a couple of brethren down in Porto Alegre. And one of them took up correspondence with Pedro and studied with him by email for a while. Till it came to the point that Pedro was asking the right questions. It looked like he was quite interested in conversion. And so this man then said to him, okay, so now exactly what neighborhood do you live in? Where are you? He said, I'm in Canada. I guess they have area codes up there that start with 51 also. And I just assumed it was a Brazilian area code. It was actually a Canadian telephone number. He was a Brazilian, is a Brazilian. He had gone to Canada to do an English course, with the intention then to go back to Brazil, back to his hometown, and continue his, he had a nice government job in that town. So because of these studies, he went back down to Brazil, but he didn't go to his hometown. He went to Porto Alegre, where the man who'd been studying with him was. They were having some special studies one weekend down there. So he went, got off the plane, this fellow met him. They continued their studies, and I don't remember if it was the same day or the next day, Pedro was baptized. But, you know, remember, he works in and lives in another part of the country, 1,500 miles away maybe, and he was in Canada. But he said, this is what I need. I need to be learning and growing here, so I'm not going to go back to Canada to finish the course. And, of course, the course was to help better his situation on his job, but he said, and I'm not going to go back home to go back to work. He said, I'll give up the job, and I'll look for something here. And it took him a while to find something. And when he did find something, he's probably making about 30% what he made on that government job he had before. But he said, this is where I need to be. And so a mess up on understanding an area code brought a fellow from Canada to Brazil to obey the gospel and totally turned his life around in a lot of different ways. Larissa, this is actually Larissa being baptized. It was dark that night, and we actually did it by flashlight. So there's a little bit of reflection off of her hand and my hair, the white stuff in the picture. But Larissa is especially a special story for us. We moved, and I'll comment on that in just a minute, last year to a city just outside of São Paulo. And we got started pretty soon studying with our next door neighbors, Larissa, her parents, and her younger sister. They didn't know anything about the Bible. We started from Genesis 1:1 with the very basics and just worked our way through different things. When we got through the Gospel of Mark, Larissa got really shaken up by some things. What really shook her was Mark 13, when she saw Jesus as the judge who would bring vengeance. Larissa got real serious that night, and from that night on, she started talking a lot with her parents. And so just a few weeks later, she had talked quite a bit with her parents, and they had agreed to let her make her decision on that, and Larissa decided to obey the gospel. Her parents, I think, are about that close, but they haven't done it yet. They have not yet made that decision. We continue to study with them, and I think they're close. I spend quite a bit of time with her father, and we get good opportunities to talk. So I would especially request your prayers for Larissa and her family as they continue to study and make some decisions. Last year, Benita and I moved. We had spent 20 years in the capital city, as they refer to it, the city of São Paulo, which is this area here, going down a little bit further here. That's about where we lived, and we have now moved to the city of Jarinu, which is about, from where we had lived, about 50 miles. It's about 20 miles outside the city of São Paulo. 50 miles north of where we were, 20 miles out of the city of São Paulo. We're positioning ourselves basically for work that we hope to be able to do in the coming decades. I, right now, can put up with the traffic of São Paulo, where our average speed on my car computer said we were doing a whopping 14 miles an hour over the last few years. Yes, the traffic is that bad. Bob Waldron was down in Brazil one time and came back and commented something about the traffic, and he's down in Alabama, and somebody said, oh yeah, I've driven through Atlanta before, I know what you're talking about. And he said, you have no clue. You don't know what I'm talking about. If you can try to imagine Atlanta, roughly the land area of Atlanta, and put about four or five times as many people into that area, and try to imagine the traffic. Christians who live in the outskirts of São Paulo, not just Christians, anybody who lives in the outskirts of São Paulo and works downtown, will typically, for maintaining an 8-hour-a-day job, will be away from home for about 14 hours between their commute time and their work time and their lunch hour. They leave early in the morning, get home late at night. It's a tiring, exhausting kind of lifestyle. And we're trying to put ourselves in a position where we'll be able to receive people in to work with training younger men for preaching, where we'll be able to receive people in for intensive Bible studies and such. So we bought a big old farmhouse where we have room. And we did a singing school in November where we invited some Christians from Chile to come over and work. Brazilian brethren basically sing just one part disharmony. And so we're trying to work with them on learning to sing. And I'm not the one to teach that. Anybody that sits close to me during worship will understand what I'm saying. So we asked some people to come over who could do a better job with that. And we were able to have that all at our house. Just let a bunch of people, we had people sleeping all over the place, but it worked. And it turns out to be a good opportunity. So that's a lot of what we're looking at. And it's a place that I think we'll be able to live a little bit better in some ways. My wife has gotten to the point she detests driving at all in São Paulo, but she's still willing to do it in the smaller town that we're in. When we moved to that city or signed the contract on the property, there were two other families that were committed to moving with us to begin a congregation there. And about the time we signed the contract, they both backed out. So we're there, we're continuing to worship back in São Paulo, but with the studies with our neighbors, I think we'll be in a situation where we'll, of necessity, begin a congregation pretty soon. So that's where we are now, after spending the last 20 years in the city itself. And I just want to make the simple request that you pray for the work that's being done in Brazil. This report is not about requesting money. I'm not asking for support. I'm adequately supported by the brethren that are backing us from other places. So I'm not here to ask for that. I'm just asking for your prayers and help, taking advantage of the opportunity that the brethren here have given to be able to give some background information. I'll be happy to talk with any of you that would like to have more information about some aspect of that work, as I tried to cram it all into 31 minutes, I think. I think I ran over just a tad. But anyway, I'll try to respect that time frame, and I'll be happy to talk with any of you that would like to afterwards. So thank you.